T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Oh, I want to be a rock star.
Steve Stone.
That one's going to be on highlight reels all year long.
Cy Young Award winner.
Look at Carlton Fisk in the sign. He hit the spot with it and strikes out Dave Parker.
Steve Stone, the first American League pitcher since Denny McLain to pitch 3 hitless innings for the American League.
Chicago White Sox television analyst.
I think Tim's going to look at a roller. Let's see if he gets one in the zone.
Tim did it again!
It's 3-0 Sox.
I gotta think that Luis is gonna have a decent at bat.
It is out of here. Bring him home. You said good at bat. How about a great at bat? Solo shot, Luis Robert.
Steve Stone.
I think Nickelback was the greatest group ever.
Hey, I wanna be a rock star.
Oh, I wanna be a rock star.
With Parkins and Spiegel on 670 The Score.
Love talking to Steve Stone. It's been a little while for this show. This conversation is brought to you by MailMedChicago.com. He's on the Alpamonte Nissan Hotline, Alpamonte Nissan in Melrose Park. Stoney, thanks for the time. How are you doing today?
I'm doing terrific. I'm rejuvenated. I'm back. The team's in first place. The pitching, especially the starting pitching, has been outstanding. And we're in the middle of 4 series that they're not critical because there's no critical series in May, but when you're playing Kansas City, Minnesota, Kansas City, and Minnesota again, you really want to get off on the right foot. I think the sweep in Kansas City was a great way to start the 12 games that are important games. Not critical, but important games.
Good for you for having the time off. Glad you enjoyed it. You missed some unbelievable starting pitching. Would love to get your thoughts on Cease and Rodon. Rodon just continues to be this amazing version of himself, but the last 2 starts of Dylan Cease are quite something. So if you could tell us what you think of their current states and whether they will stick in their current states.
Well, first of all, can you be as good as Carlos Rodon over a full season? Nobody ever has. I don't think he's going to have an ERA around a half. 0.50, I don't think that's going to happen. As far as Dylan Cease is concerned, the last couple of times out, he's been absolutely unhittable. So that, obviously, he will show that he's mortal. But, I think both of them always had the ability. When I looked at Dylan Cease when he came over and I watched his stuff, I kept saying on the air that all this guy has to do is harness this command. And I mentioned a few different things that I could see, and that's exactly what Ethan Katz saw, and that is flying open, staying over the back foot longer. And the same thing has to do with Rodon. He simplified the motion of both of those pitchers, which allows a repeatable motion, and it allows all the ability that they have to come out because they're consistently in the strike zone. Carlos realized that in order to win games, you don't necessarily have to have the greatest back foot slider in the world, but it helps to throw strike one. So between Dylan Cease throwing strike one and Carlos throwing strike one, these guys are able to repeat their motion, keep everything within the framework of the strike zone, understand in his career that that Rodon is maybe a little bit more advanced than Cease. However, when you look at stuff and you look at velocity and you look at some movement, you realize that both of these guys could be dominant starters. And it really doesn't matter what number they are. I mean, everybody says, well, they're 4 and 5. Well, when you take the baseball, you're number one on that day. And the only difference a number made as far as a fifth starter is when you get skipped. When there's a rainout, when there's an off day, you get skipped and they roll over to the number one guy. Coming off a 60-game season, you're not going to skip that number five, because you're worried about the innings and the workload for each and every one of these guys. And that's a delicate balance, boys, is figuring out the workload for each and every one of these guys based on their past workloads and record of injuries. And then you have to make sure they stay healthy, because this pennant is still going to be won in August and September. And quite obviously, then you want to have the bullets to go into the postseason. And to do that, you have to keep everybody healthy. So you're going to see guys push back. You're going to see them miss some starts. But they're not going to skip any of these starters for anybody else, because right now they're five guys and pretty much the top of their game.
With that in mind, do you think they'll ever consider a six-man this year? Like when Kopech starts to get mixed in, if a couple starters were willing to go on their side day, is that something they should consider?
I hope not. Because, again, with off days and with rainouts and everything else that you have, then you get into sometimes 7 and 8 days. One of the advantages to being a starting pitcher over a bullpen guy is you get in a rhythm. You're able to have a program based on what you do as a starter. Let's say 2 days after you pitch, you start a game, the next day you have off. The next day you have a nice blowout bullpen session where you extend yourself a little bit. The day after that you probably throw some long toss, and boom, you're ready to start again. But you get into six starters, which means occasionally these guys are going to throw on the seventh and sometime the eighth day. It's impossible to keep a rhythm. It's really hard to do that. And so I think the ideal thing is five quality starters. Have five quality starters. You can mix in a day. And, you know, understand, they're being really careful with Kopech. I mean, this is a huge asset, but he hadn't pitched in 2 years. You're going to get him out there. You think he's going to start. If he gets to 150 innings, that might be too much. I don't know what the innings limit is, but they want to make sure when they are knocking at the door to win this and then go into the playoffs, you got a healthy and strong Michael Kopech, because he could be a huge weapon as you move into October. And when you look at the starting pitching, you don't know how any of these guys are going to hold up. History says somebody will get hurt. That just is what happens to pitchers in the major leagues. Not necessarily these pitchers, but pitchers get hurt. When that happens, you have a pretty good insurance policy in Michael Kopech. He's not going to help you very much if he's pitched out.
Talking to Steve Stone, Parkinson Spiegel on the score. So let's talk about the number one pitcher in this rotation, Lucas Giolito. Do you buy that some or all of his struggles and problems are James McCann isn't here and that's the issue?
Well, I think you have to get used to catchers. They had an unusual, let's put it this way, they had an unusual relationship, because except for Mark Burley, who literally could throw to one of you guys and he would never shake off a sign because that was Mark Burley, most pitchers get comfortable with a catcher, and their relationship, the McCann-Giolito relationship, transcended the normal pitcher-catcher relationship, because Lucas never shook him off. I mean, Lucas always said, he's my brain, all I do is execute on the mound. And that was a comfort zone that Lucas had, that he's not going to get overnight with anybody. I mean, whether it's Grandal or whether it's Collins, you're just not going to have that right away. Now, can he grow into that? Yeah. You know, I've seen a lot of great pitchers in the history of baseball, and a lot of them had a personal catcher, but something happens. The personal catcher gets hurt. Well, the pitcher just can't pack it up. The personal catcher gets traded. Pitcher can't quit winning. They still find a way to win. I think Lucas has a chance to be a great starter. I think he's in the neighborhood of that now, but he's got to show it over and over again. And you show it by throwing to different catchers. That's just the way the game works, because, you know, nobody catches 150 games anymore.
Well, I'm glad you're giving some credence to that, as it's a real thing, just having that trust. Did you have it with Rick Dempsey? Or, like, how necessary was it for you when you were at your best, Steve?
Well, look, Rick Dempsey was the greatest mechanical catcher I have ever seen. In other words, he could catch everything I threw, and the major thing for me was block a pitch in the dirt, because I threw so many curveballs that the wipeout curveball is always in the dirt. And Rick told me when I came over to Baltimore, he goes, I want you to know something. If I call a curveball with a man at third, you bury it in the dirt if you have to. He said, because the only way you can get it by me is throw it over my head. You will never throw a ball by me in the dirt. And that's exactly what happened. So I had supreme confidence in him. As far as calling the game was concerned, I told just about each and every catcher, anybody that had an inquiry, you show me the column that says losing catcher and I'll let you call the game. But that column says losing pitcher. So I'm going to call the game. Now, that was me, and by the time I got to Baltimore, I was a veteran pitcher already. But I had a manager take the right to call pitches away from me. That was in San Francisco. I went from 4-2 as a rookie to 5-9 and got sent down to the minor leagues. We had a guy who was an offensive catcher by the name of Dick Dietz. They called him the Mule for a reason. He had a frog in his glove, couldn't catch anything, and because he couldn't throw very well to second, every time a runner got on, he put down one. It was a fastball. Didn't take long for that to get around, and so that kind of hurt. But I think you have to have confidence in the pitch you throw. You don't necessarily have to have confidence in that catcher except for mechanical basis. Block it if it's in the dirt. Catch it if it's in the neighborhood of the plate. And every time you need a big play made at the plate, when there's a play at the plate, I prefer the ball stick in his glove and he makes the tag. So that, for me, that's what a catcher had to do for me. But every pitcher is different. It's a different era. Guys have a different philosophy. I just knew that that was a special relationship, Giolito and McCann. That being said, McCann got $40 million. He got 4 years at $10 million. You just don't give a guy at his age, you don't give him 4 years at $10 million. So the Sox weren't going to do that, and, you know, Lucas just has to move on, and eventually he will. If he's as good as I think he is, he's going to be able to win consistently with whoever's catching him.
You've said many times on this station, on this show, you like your catchers who catch the ball when talking about Yasmani Grandal, and now we've been talking a little bit about his offense, Stoney. He leads baseball in walks with 27 against only 19 strikeouts, 7 hits on the season, and only 4 extra base hits. Are we in a position here where he's in the middle of the lineup, he's paid so much money that in some point, like, hey, the walk isn't what you want out of him and he needs to be more of a run producer?
Oh, I think it's situational. I think there are certain times when taking a walk is terrific. You're leading off an inning, I think taking a walk is fine. You're the tying or winning run late in a ball game, I think taking a walk is fine. But there's also situations, and I saw it a couple games ago with Yasmani. He came up in a situation with runners at first and third and only one out, and that's a game he walked 4 times. But in that one at bat, he showed me that he had a pretty good idea about what to do, because he swung at a slider out of the strike zone on the first pitch and then hit a high fastball up and out of the strike zone for a sacrifice fly to center field. That's what I wanted him to do in that situation. That's what he went up to do. I think there's certain situations where looking for a walk is not the way to do it. And if he's in a position to drive home a run, I think he's got to swing at pitches that are just off the plate. So, yeah, and I've said it, as delightful and charming as the walk is, there's sometimes when guys who can be run producers, they have to be run producers. And especially with Yasmani, because he's a guy who can hit the ball out of the park. He's probably a 25 home run man. This is a team starved for the long ball. And so with the absence of maybe 65 to 70 home runs, which is what I said the departure of Jimenez and Robert is, you need somebody to step up and hit the ball out of the park, and you're not going to do it if you take a walk. So, again, depending on the situation, right now his on-base percentage is great, but the Sox also need him to drive in some runs.
You heard this conversation on sports radio when Frank Thomas was here. They've had it in Cincinnati for Joey Votto. If there was sports radio in Boston in the 40s and 50s, they would have had it for Ted Williams, Steve Stone. It's a common refrain. All right, you mentioned home runs. The White Sox are 27th, as of yesterday anyway, in home runs in MLB.
They're up the track. Up the track, as they say.
But they're 4th in runs scored as of yesterday. Mm-hmm. Is that inherently an impressive thing or a scary thing, that discrepancy?
Not scary to me, because when you face really good pitchers, they're just not going to let you hit the ball out of the park all that often. So when you have, I mean, that's why you see some very powerful teams go into the playoffs and they're an early exit, is because they're seeing a team's best. They're going to see them a couple of times in a short series, and those guys aren't going to let you hit the ball out of the ballpark. So learning how to win is a benefit to the ball club. If they learn how to win the close games and they learn how to win, and for me the key is if you can win games giving up 3 or less runs, then you're going to be a team who knows how to win. And the Sox have been able to do that quite a bit, as a matter of fact. And so by learning how to do that, eventually, and hopefully these guys come back and everybody's healthy. Eventually, when that happens, and it's going to be a long time for both Eloy and Luis, when they do come back, this team's going to have confidence that they can win low-scoring games. And then you add home runs to the offense, and you got yourself in pretty good position. So I'm not alarmed at all. They're not hitting the ball out of the park because there's no column, there's no home run column that you get a trophy for. You get a trophy for wins. Just win. Just beat the other team. I don't care how you beat them. If you beat them with a hit batsman, you beat them with a walk, you beat them with a pass ball or wild pitch, as long as you win the game, that's what counts. And you have to keep yourself in a position to win the game. I think you've noticed the defense has gotten better. I don't think that's a surprise. Last year it was certainly a better than competent defense. Got off to a rough start. Now it's back to being a better than competent defense. And I think that's what we should expect the rest of the way.
Speaking of defense, before the year, we went around the room on the show and guessed who was going to lead the White Sox in innings in left field, and that was before Adam Engel had his setback. The other day, Andrew Vaughn had a really nice play out there. How would you handicap that race right now in terms of what the most common outfield alignment's going to be?
Well, if you're going to tell me that Adam Engel's back, then we can certainly make one of those, because if he comes back, he's going to play most of the time. He's just a magnificent center fielder. As far as left field is concerned, I think one of the most surprising parts of this baseball team is the fact that you took a lifetime first baseman, moved him into left field in the major leagues, said, here, son, here's your glove, now go play it. And he has not only not embarrassed himself, but he's made some good plays in left field. I think Andrew Vaughn, who now is hitting, I guess, over 300, hasn't hit the ball out of the park yet, but he hit the bottom of the wall in Kansas City. I think you're going to see him start to hit the ball out of the park. He's going to be a quality major league hitter. That was never the question. The question was, could he fit defensively in left field? I think the answer is yes. So will he come out of the game late for defense? Yeah, pretty sure he will, especially if Hamilton hasn't played yet. They'll probably switch him. Leury is one of those guys that gives you good speed, doesn't always take the best routes to balls, but he can give you a lot of versatility out there. And hopefully Adam Eaton comes back, because he was off to a great start, and if the legs are okay, he can come back. I mean, he at least gives you a competent right field every day. So I think the answer to your question is Vaughn, and then we'll see about the rest depending on the health of Engel.
And how about that emerging right fielder, Danny Mendick, Steve Stone? Just incredible versatility from that guy. I love the way he goes about his business, got to say.
Well, Danny Mendick is a tough out, and it's really funny because I just talked to a former front office, high front office personnel guy from a team that viewed themselves as a contender. He tried to trade for Mendick 2 years ago. He told me today, he said, boy, I really like the way he played. I said, well, he's a good two-strike hitter. He makes some contact, and he can play any position on the field. He goes, yeah, he said, but we couldn't make the deal at the time. So there were a few teams interested in him, and I think what he's showing you is you don't have to have otherworldly skills to play this game. You just have to be tenacious. You have to work hard. You have to be willing to accept what every organization will do for you as far as moving you around, moving you up and down like a yo-yo between Schaumburg and Chicago. And Danny Mendick is one of those guys, goes about his business, doesn't say much, just takes a lot of gloves to the park and can play anywhere you want him to play. And you got to love those guys, because this game obviously highlights the stars, but it's made up of many more Mendicks than it is Trouts.
Steve, Aaron Bummer, after a bumpy start, has found seemingly the best version of himself. It's an 82% ground ball rate of late. Is he the most important guy in that bullpen?
Well, he certainly is one of them, because he's pretty much your late left-hander. Now, Garrett Crochet is back, and we hope that he's back 100%. But Aaron Bummer's stuff is so good and gets so much movement that if you just would take a look at where guys hit the ball on him, you'll realize that almost without exception, guys hit the top of the baseball. When you hit the top of the baseball, guys, it's impossible to hit it out of the park if you hit it on the ground. Can't give up any home runs if they hit the ball on the ground. More times than not, they hit the ball on the ground. And, yes, Aaron Bummer is very valuable to this team, because he is the one bridge guy to get the ball consistently to Hendricks. I'm hoping that Garrett Crochet can eventually be another one of those guys. But right now, you know, he's in the infancy stages of his career. He's got a great arm. He's got terrific stuff. One of the things that you should look for is Garrett Crochet now refining that changeup. because we all know that he's got a big fastball, although everybody's concerned that the velocity is down, and his slider is a good one. But if he refines that changeup, he doesn't have to throw 102, because that changeup is 90, 91 miles an hour. And because he does have a very, very quick fastball, nobody will be on that change. So I think as he improves, I think, assuming that he's going to be healthy, he's going to help Bummer. You have two left-handers, one helps the other. But Bummer is one of the keys, again, because he throws ground balls and he can come in and get you a double play in situations other pitchers can't.
Stoney, last thing, we wanted to wish you a happy five-year anniversary. Do you know what it's the anniversary of?
5 years. The last time I paid a check?
You live you lived a charmed life, and I'm happy for you if that's the case. But no, this will jog your memory.
Okay. Jammed him, ate him up. Tied. Long way to go. Watch out, he goes in.
I think he made the catch.
Made the catch. Did he hang on?
But he's hurt.
Yeah, he's hurt.
It was a spectacular effort, and this is a real, real bad sight. Wow, it looked like he hit his mouth right on the seat. Ball was in the glove.
Oh, boy.
Wow.
Carlos Sanchez, and
when we find out,
I'm going downstairs. You take over, okay?
So Carlos takes over at third base.
Yes, I remember that one vividly. And you know the good thing about it is that Jason doesn't move as fast as Hawk, so he's not going downstairs to check on anybody. And it's not that he doesn't care, because Jason has a heart as big as all outdoors. He's just not going to go in the locker room and check on him, because I'm afraid that, you know, he might be back for the second game of the doubleheader. He'd be the first to tell you that. But, that was an interesting day. I'd never had a broadcaster leave the booth before. And understand something. You know, I worked 15 years with Harry Carey. Harry Carey never left the booth for any reason. The man had a bladder the size of Long Island. He never had to go to the bathroom. He never left the booth. So I always knew Harry was going to be there, and just about every other broadcaster I was ever with, when they're supposed to be there, they were kind of there. And then Hawk says, "Well, you take it over. I'm going downstairs." I thought he was kidding. Next thing I look, he's out of the booth. And it's not easy to get down the stairs in the old Texas Park, because you got to go on an elevator and then through catacombs and avoid the nice-sized rats that were down there. I mean, it was unbelievable. Yet he checked on him, and eventually, as we know, Todd lived to fight another day, and Hawk eventually came back to the booth.
All right. I just saw him.
And?
Just an incredible moment of television, never to be seen before or since.
I don't think we're going to see that again.
No, you're the best. We'll talk soon. Thank you.
Okay, guys. Have a good rest of the show.
Thanks, you.
Stoney.
Happy anniversary.
Oh, God.
What
to
a great
celebrate,
line.
Oh, my God. Unbelievable. To celebrate the anniversary of that moment, the Pittsburgh Pirates designated Todd Frazier for assignment, which I thought was rude, frankly, on the anniversary of a tough moment for Todd.
It all comes full circle.
All right. I just saw him.
And?
And? And why couldn't we just wait for the PR staff to tell us what the trainers said? Why did you have to do this in person?
Why did you have to leave your job and make me do play-by-play?
What do you think Todd Frazier was thinking?
Why is Hawk
in the trainer's room?
Aren't you doing a game? Aren't you doing a game, Hawk? What is this?
You probably think I must have hit my head really hard, because Hawk's down here for some reason.
How long was I out? Hawk is already here. I think it was like the fifth inning. This is amazing.
And I mean, other guys in Hawk's career got hurt. He didn't go check on them. They must have felt so insulted.
I got to say, I think pound for pound, that's the best Steve Stone appearance of the season so far. That was remarkable.
He was great.
Remarkable analysis of several different elements on the ball club. And we got story time. Dick Dietz had a frog in his glove. Let me tell you, Danny, I've been around our game a long time. I have never heard the phrase "had a frog in his glove," but that makes all the sense in the world. And how about that dude, Dick Dietz? He called for a fastball every time there was people on base. It ruined Stoney's ERA. That's amazing.
I like that there are many more Mendicks than Trouts. It's true.
It's true.
That's true.
Yes.
I thought all of that was great. Steve Stone was great. It was fantastic. And we can now get back to football. I'm breaking NFL schedule news. It's Parkinson Spiegel on the Score.
Let's get back to football.
Bears, Rams, week one in L.A., Sunday night football, able to exclusively report. Shocked I'm not on the bottom line, the scroll on ESPN. They should be breaking into programming on the NFL Network.
Got 184 retweets so far for your news nugget, which has now been aggregated first by The Score, which put you into a news story. Or put that bit of information into a news story. But what, you know, what are you looking for, Danny, as you shamelessly try to rise above 18?
Where's the Tribune? Where's
word from the Bears PR people? No word.
That's right. That's right. This will be 4 years in a row, Spiegs, that the Bears have played the Rams on prime time. That's crazy.
It's Chicago and L.A., baby.
Yep. And people saying, I'm getting a lot of people, obviously, in my mentions, as it is getting moved around the internet into a bunch of places. Oh, Bears-Rams, that sucks. No one wants to see it. Those games have been terrible in the past. Why would you want Andy Dalton there? So many better options. Media market number two and number three.
Of course.
And Kroenke paid $5 billion for the land and the stadium, and they opened the stadium in a pandemic, so they want to release that stadium, an actual unveiling with hopefully full stadium, depending on COVID and California rules and all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But so they get it for the stadium. Just like when you build a new stadium, you get to the front of the line for a Super Bowl rotation, or all-star game in baseball, that sort of thing. They help you out when you spend $5 billion on a stadium that houses two teams.
Now, the Rams had a week one primetime game last year as they tried to give them that unveiling too, didn't they? I believe it was Sunday night. I remember Al Michaels talking about it, but yep. Maybe I'm remembering week two.
I think it was week two. I think that was week two last year when we were joking about the present to the city of Los Angeles and the pandemic, when it's like, they actually spent a lot of tax money on
so it. So maybe it was the first Sunday night game, but the NBC crew did the Thursday night game before that. But it's very interesting. And for anybody who didn't hear us talk about this, I went ahead and guaranteed you, sadly, that Andy Dalton will be the quarterback in that game for the Chicago Bears. You and I bet $100 on it. And I don't want that to be the case. I just believe that's going to be the case, just for at least a game. You know,
I should have gotten odds. We'll bet $100 on it, and it'll be fun for the show. And it's fine if I lose the bet. I think Fields is better, and I think
it's not the question,
but it should be, and it might be. Like if he shows himself to clearly be the better player over the course of training camp, where it's obvious to that locker room, I believe he'll play. So if you think that he is much better than him, then I don't think that Matt Nagy is going to choose the worst quarterback. So I do think it's the question.
I don't think it is only dependent on the quarterback. And, you know, we were talking about some of this in the pre-show meeting, that I think Tevin Jenkins, there's no other left tackle on this team. There's none. So I think it's a big, big deal to trust the blind side of Justin Fields to that guy.
Well, so Brian Baldinger was on with Mully and Haw, and he actually made the point that, well, the key to the first round pick starting is actually the second round pick, Tevin Jenkins.
Well, I like Tevin Jenkins. A lot of good tape on him. Juan Castillo's the offensive line coach, and he thinks he can play left tackle, and Juan's coached a lot of great ones, Jason Peters, and I mean, you go through the list of guys that he's coached at that position in the NFL. And so I think he's going to get every opportunity to go take that job. It's wide open right now. There's a big hole there. They need to fill it. And so they'll know pretty quickly, you know, when he's going up again. You know, you put Khalil Mack out there and you let him go, Khalil, we got to find out if this kid can play left tackles. Here's what I need you to do. I need you to go full speed, buckle it up, and tell us in a week whether this kid can play left tackle or not. I mean, that's what I would do. That's what Bill Parcells did with LT when they drafted Jumbo Elliott. They just said, LT, I know it's practice, it's preseason, but by golly, I'm going to find out if this kid can play left tackle. So just give him everything he's got, and you tell me if he can play. And that's what I would do in Chicago.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because we were talking about this thing with linking Tevin Jenkins with Justin Fields, and we talked to Tom Thayer yesterday, and he was saying that he thinks that if Tevin Jenkins is struggling as a left tackle, you might be better off starting Andy Dalton just so you don't teach Justin Fields bad habits. And Dalton's probably used to playing with a line that will give up some pressure, and maybe Justin Fields would start running quicker or learning bad habits. You just got to be wary of getting him in the right situation.
Well, if Tevin Jenkins is a leaky faucet, then you don't put him out there. I mean, it's just that simple. I mean, you can't play left tackle in this business. I don't care who's that quarterback. And, you know, be a turnstile. Like, that doesn't do anybody any good. It doesn't do your line any good. Doesn't do David Montgomery any – it doesn't do anybody any good. So, I mean, that's what training camp is all about. You know, is one of the reasons it's all about is to find out if this kid can play it and if he can hold up. And so you better get him tested before you make a decision on the quarterback, I think.
Oh, man.
I don't – first of all, it's hilarious. Let's focus on the funny first, and then we can get to the football point.
What I find incredibly funny is, like, you know, you don't want to do it so he develops bad habits. You don't want to put Fields out there. No, I don't want to put Fields out there because I don't want him taking the kind of vicious shots to the back that Tevin Jenkins might allow. I think Andy Dalton's $10 million is worth allowing him to take those shots for a while.
If they can't figure out whether or not Tevin Jenkins is capable of starting in the NFL, though, from OTA, minicamp, and preseason games, this is the Chicago Bears we're talking about here. And Justin Fields is a runner. So what? You start him week one, Tevin Jenkins is great, and then he gets hurt week three, and now you got a backup in there. What, are you benching Justin Fields?
No.
That's just not how it works.
Yeah.
Like, at some point, you're going to have to play behind backup offensive linemen. Like, the Baldinger story about Parcells and the Giants and Lawrence Taylor teaching, Parcells asking Lawrence Taylor to inform him of whether a tackle was ready.
Jumbo Elliott.
That was great. And I absolutely could see Matt Nagy relying on Khalil Mack to get Tevin Jenkins up to speed. But you make that decision independent of who your left tackle is, in my opinion, because Andy Dalton's a statue back there. So if your goal is to win games and Tevin Jenkins isn't good, Justin Fields has a better chance of overcoming a bad left tackle than a statue of a quarterback. So to me, I don't think the two are really related, frankly.
No, I disagree. I think they are, and I think they'll think about the entire team and complementary football as they make this decision. They want to put Justin Fields in a situation to succeed.
But if Tevin Jenkins is bad, we just don't start Justin Fields?
No, not necessarily. It's just they're really going to have to think about, look, it's week one. It is the beginning of the dude's career. And do you want him to immediately have to access 100% of the skill set that he has to really rely on escapability that quickly? I think you take it into consideration. And so it's not as binary as maybe Baldinger is saying it, or as you're summarizing, like, if he's bad, you don't play Fields. But I think it's absolutely a factor. And if they have that as a factor, in addition to, you know, he's not quite grasping this realm of the playbook just yet, I think it can be a factor that pushes them towards Dalton.
I think everything is a factor, right? None of this is just one thing or the other. Everything is something that you consider, of course. But, man, it's the NFL. In the Rams game, you got Aaron Donald.
Big boy league.
Yeah, there's challenges every week, right? Oh, you're not going to play him against the Packers. Oh, he might get intercepted and hurt his confidence with Jair Alexander out there at corner. Like, I just, you could do this every week in some form or fashion. And again, it's the Bears. Like, at some point, he's going to have Jermaine Ifedi as his right tackle. He's going to be running.
All season, maybe.
Guy's going to have to get used to running. So I personally loved the story, and I think that the analysis obviously comes from a very smart place. But, man, I hope that it's not tied to Tevin Jenkins. I hope it is tied to which quarterback gives the Bears the best chance to win. I know you are hot for this, and I think it's hilarious. It's right up our alley. Petty competitions in sports, next on The Score.
I have a competition problem.
And actually a pettiness problem. I feel like Michael Jordan would have really enjoyed this story. This is the type of thing he would get behind, he would win, and frankly, he would gamble on, Matt Spiegel.
It became personal with me.
Yes. I think it is the stupidest competition in sports that is currently going. And I don't know if it's going to last, but the national anthem standoff between Luis Oviedo of the Pirates and Alex Blandino of the Reds as they battled yesterday to see who could stay out on the field longer after the national anthem was done, standing with their hand on their heart. And oh my God. And finally, the home plate ump realizes what's happening. He yells at them to go to the dugout, Danny. Nobody moves. They respond like completely blow off the umpire. He yells a second time. Luis Oviedo obeys and goes back to the Pirates dugout. Alex Blandino of the Reds smirks, you know, raises his arm and goes back to the Reds dugout to thunderous applause from his teammates. This is before the game has even begun. Is that the stupidest competition currently available in professional sports?
With that caveat at the end, the answer is probably yes. Like it is probably the dumbest competition.
Yeah.
But I respect it. I really do. I think it's silly that we play the national anthem at sporting events. I think it's fairly ridiculous. We don't play it at movies or plays or anything like that. But
speak for yourself, man. I play the national anthem before every movie I go to.
All right. That's a totally normal thing. Remind me to never go to a theater with you. But if you're going to do it, because I've gambled on the national anthem many times.
God. That's hilarious.
So this is now, it's like the game within the game. Because you can only really find a line for the national anthem at like the national championship in college football or, of course, the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
But now the players have turned Super Bowl prop betting into a random baseball game in May.
Right.
I'm here for it.
I assume there's no money involved, but I don't know.
Why would you assume that?
Yeah, you're right.
That is a crazy thing to say. You think that the players are like, hey, let's have a gentleman's wager on whether or not you can stay out there longer than anyone else. No way, man. These are ball players. They're gambling.
Danny, it probably won't surprise you that I spent part of my morning looking at past national anthem standoffs, because this is not a brand new thing. The Mac Daddy is probably the 2013 NLDS Game 6 Cardinals-Dodgers. Joe Kelly and Scott Van Slyke. Joe Kelly gives a deke move towards the dugout, so Scott Van Slyke thinks he's won, and he bails. Nope, Joe Kelly remains out there and wins it. And then I just tweeted just now my favorite anthem standoff, Tigers-Marlins in 2019, when Sandy Alcantara, the pitcher for the Marlins, is trying to stay out there. The reliever Daniel Stump for the Tigers is there. But Alcantara, like, his teammates start bringing him a helmet just in case gameplay starts. This is after the anthem, you know?
Yeah.
They're like, how long are you going to be here? They bring him a helmet, and then somebody else brings him a catcher's mask and a chest protector. By the end of the standoff, he's fully protected. They offer him a chair. He says no. Stump and Alcantara are smirking at each other the entire time. And I'm not going to tell you how it ends. I just tweeted it, but I mean, this is a beautiful little subtext to our game, in my opinion.
A beautiful subtext to your game. Texter's saying that it's a college baseball staple, and so now it's going to the big leagues, and that's good.
Yeah, there's a video out there, full teams. I think it's UConn versus Coastal Carolina. Yeah, I watched it this morning. The entire teams staying out there, just gambling on each other, and I think it's the team that has to go play defense that ends up losing, because they're like, I guess we have to start the game.
But do you? What's slower? Teams standing on the foul lines for baseball or actually playing the game of baseball?
Oh, you bastard.
I'm just wondering.
You terrible man.
I'm just wondering. Which is a slower enterprise? But
it is like, which would you rather watch? Paint dry, baseball, or a national anthem standoff for you?
I mean,
Just get me to the anthem playoffs.
Yeah, give me the anthem playoffs, exactly. A good baseball game would come in first, but a bad baseball game or a national anthem standoff, I'll take the anthem standoff because that's going to be over in a matter of minutes as opposed to 4.5 hours.
Yes, theoretically. By the way, in 2014, minor league umpires were instructed to throw players out if they do this. So it has not happened in the minors, but right now in the majors – there's no such law, but at some point Rob Manfred may have to come down and say, if you do this, we will throw you out of the game. Can you imagine the fun sucking nature of that announcement?
Joe West can't wait. He's already sitting there in the anthem waiting for a reason to throw someone out before you even hit the final note. He's trying to toss you.
Yeah, it's 10 seconds after the anthem, somebody's like tying a shoe, and Joe West throws him out.
So he can make it about himself once again.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Whenever you can make the national anthem about yourself, I think you got to do it.
He would do it.
Yeah, the Joe West staple. What a dumb thing to throw minor leaguers out for doing it. Your game, man. Your game.
But they wanted to get the games going.
Just throw them out. You got to throw them out? It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I respect it, though. Hey, by the way, Speaks, I continue to go viral on Twitter for breaking the news that the Bears open in LA on Sunday Night Football against the Rams, someone who just retweeted me, man who manages a sports book in Las Vegas, has set the line for Bears and Rams week one. Want to take a guess?
Wow, has already set the line for Bears, Rams week one. Well, Rams get 3 just for being the home team. It's night one of the Matthew Stafford era. He probably assumes it's Dalton as well. I'll say Rams minus 7.
Very good. Rams minus 6.5 with a total of 43.5. Jeff Sherman of Superbook Sports, VP of Risk Management out in Las Vegas, has set a number for Bears and Rams off of your boys' tweet.
You've started the machinery rolling, Parkin.
Football. Am I going to be the only one who chants?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. That's
I have more national.
That makes sense.
I have more national anthem standoff content I'd like to provide.
I wonder who would win in that poll question. More football or national standoff guy? It's very close. I understand. We're taking you up to Cubs baseball. It's Parkinson Spiegel on the score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with autopay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without autopay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.